Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code SPOTIFY for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Yo, 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 and welcome back to Creeps and Crimes
Podcast.
I'm Taylor.
I'm Morgan. Happy Thursday and happy episode 189.
No, 83.
183.
Is it 83 or is it 84?
I think it's 89. It's 183. I remember it is on it my 183? Notes now. We're back.
We're back from Jamaica.
We look terrifying, but we have our Jamaica hoodies on.
Yep. So cozy.
Cheese
so
for
cute.
A picture.
So tan.
Not me.
Wait,
not.
Let me get my shirt up. Ready? 3, 2, 1. I would love to. I can't wait to hear that sound.
We're out of fucking breath. We're exhausted. We don't have voices.
Gone.
And
the pollen came out when we flew back in.
Thank God for that.
Thank God. I mean, what else would we do?
Why wouldn't it?
Why wouldn't it? Anyways, we had an amazing time in Jamaica.
So much fun.
Patreon, your Piping Hot Goss next Wednesday has all the Piping Hot Goss. I might even release it early for you guys.
Oh yeah, they would like that.
Yeah, if it gets done on time, that's the issue.
It'll be a cute little surprise. You guys would love that, but we'll see.
We'll see.
But if you want to hear about the pink pussy shots,
the 32 million Miami Vices,
the Island Delights,
the Island Delights,
the chocolate covered strawberry blowjobs.
If you want to hear about the best breakfast of our lives, if you want to hear about how apparently you have to have a pole to hold up the tail of the plane or else you're going to teeter totter back and forth and your pilot tells you that.
Medical emergency on the plane. Not us.
Me getting absolutely gutted by a cane on the...
I didn't even tell Patreon also...
What?
About me whipping that woman with the backpack.
Oh my God.
At the gym. Okay, real quick. This is the only story, and then we're going to keep giving you hints, and you'll have to listen to the rest on Patreon.
Yep.
We're sitting in
Patreon.com/creeps and crimes.
Period. We're in line to check our luggage. We're like scanning our passports to check our luggage at the Montego Bay airport. And I go to get my passport out of my backpack. And me and Taylor have just been talking about how I have no spatial awareness.
Zero.
I run into everything. I hit everybody. I like am just like walking like it's just an empty playing field here.
Yep.
And there's nothing that could be in my way. I will just barricade right through it. I go take my passport out of my backpack. I put it back in my backpack. They scan them. I put it back in my backpack and I swing my backpack around my back to put on my shoulder.
Like she's lassoing it on her own body.
It smacks this woman in the face.
Hard as fuck.
Hard as fuck.
I don't know how she continued walking. Like I would have been.
It shocked her. I was like, I'm so sorry.
and she kept
walking and just looked back at me like this. And I was like, oh my God.
She gave devil eyes.
Anyway, so if you want to hear more shit like that, the tail on the plane, the cane on the plane.
The cane on the plane.
Why women kill.
Why women kill. If you haven't watched it, go watch it. If you guys are looking to go on a vacation to Montego Bay, we 10 out of 10 recommend going to. We didn't put the name out there until we got back, but it was the Hyatt Zilara at Montego Bay Rose Hall. And it was the best all-inclusive resort I've ever been to. I've been to like
amazing.
Four, I think. And this one has been like better than my honeymoon.
Yeah.
It was that good.
And if anybody is planning a bachelor and they want a wonderful, amazing travel agent who we praise on our hands and knees, this is not a fucking ad.
We don't have any affiliation or any sponsorship with these people at all.
This is not an ad. Please reach out. The Instagram is tagged on my pictures, I
on
think yours,
pictures.
On all pictures. It's Vacay Vibes. His name is Aaron. Mm-hmm. Aaron C. Tell him Morgan and Taylor sent you. And
so we can get some points.
So
that's the only thing we can get out of
that. That's
all
we're getting is reward points. We're trying to get this air tag. So if you're booking a honeymoon or just like a couple's vacay, like anything, he is absolutely wonderful.
Phenomenal. Like we didn't have to worry for shit. It really was like so chill the entire time. So easy, so quick, so efficient. We just really had a great time with him. And if you ever fly into Montego Bay specifically, use Club Mobay.
Use Club
Mobay. Get it early because there's only so many tickets per day. Get it for your arrival plan your departure, it's worth the fucking extra $50 on arrival, $30 on departure.
Is that how much it was?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
$33 on departure.
Yeah, it was. It's worth it.
It's
especially worth it. Whenever the airport has no air conditioning and Club Obey does.
Does. And has free food and, well, like, spoiled you paid for
and we
it.
Need AC.
Yeah, we really needed AC. It was so fucking hot.
And we had hoodies on.
And we were also trapped on the plane because we had to make sure we didn't teeter totter back and forth.
Yeah. So if you want to hear all of that, please join our Patreon. Link is in the bio on Instagram.
Everything.
It's on the link below this. It's everywhere. You could find it. Search us.
And
/ what is it?
Patreon.com/creepsandcrimes.
Patreon.com/creepsandcrimes.
And we're also going to be posting some more of the videos. That was just really the best vlog that we had that was like coherent. The other ones were questionable.
Is my Dougie going to make it in the next vlog?
It has to.
I think it has to.
It
too.
Has to make it in.
In the other video? At the end of the night with the concert?
Yeah.
My ass is out the whole time.
My titties were out.
You can see into my vagina.
Yeah.
So
and
somehow,
we were in front of kids.
If we could figure that out.
Blur.
Blur.
Blur. Immediately.
Because it's such a cute video. But my ass is out.
Okay. Moving on from that. Are you ready to move on?
We're ready to move on.
I want to thank everyone that left us reviews and got us, are keeping us at this 4.8. It was the best surprise. Every morning we were in Jamaica, we get a new fucking review. So I just want to say, SBC0521, you fucking rock. Ashley Reed, you fucking rock. DJ Mizell, you fucking
DJ
rock.
DJ Colin.
Jenny P, you rock. Eve Jam, you rock. Swimmer 1001, you rock. Megan, freaking JKG, blah, 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 blah. I mean,
Elemental P.
Jacqueline, Crystal, Taylor J with an E instead of an A. Allie,
ooh,
you
Taylor
guys
or J.
Really, really fucking rock. Like,
thank you guys so much. It made our mornings.
I mean, this was so sick. I love seeing these come through. So if you haven't left a review on Apple yet, please go do it. We love seeing what you guys have to say. You know the rules. 5 stars only. We'll allow 4 stars if you got enough beef.
If you have beef with us, we'll take
but
a 4-star. But if
don't.
You even try 3 or below,
we're coming to your house.
We're knocking on the front door.
And also on Spotify, you can give ratings, not reviews. So, but we love seeing your guys' like comments and questions come back whenever we like do a question or a poll on Spotify. We have one of our people that works with us. We're not going to tell their name or anything, but because they're more private, but they are helping us like sift through stuff like that through reviews and Spotify and Apple and all that stuff.
When you got DMs and emails and then Spotify's like, oh, let's open up a forum. You're like,
oh
my
God. Oh my God. So we have someone that's doing that and they send us all the ones that come through and let us see them. So you guys are fucking cute.
You guys are so cute. More and then moving on, we are making a formal apology to the royal family.
Yep, we are. Sure are. And that's all that we're going to say
about
that.
And that's all that we are going to say about that.
Moving on. The bridge.
Oh
my
God. So,
everyone in Maryland. Oh my Lord. Baltimore.
So today is March 26th.
Mm-hmm.
And I woke up for work. I get up for work at 4:45 in the mm-hmm. morning. And immediately I had a Twitter, what's it called? X notification on my phone. And it was like, you know, mass casualty.
Baltimore,
Maryland. I was like, what the fuck is going on? Opened up my phone and I just sat there in my bed like, holy shit, I've never seen anything like that
in my life.
It is so terrible, so sad.
It was
so
a
scary
failure. Like, that is the scariest thing. And what was crazy is I woke up this morning to my alarm, just turned my alarm off, didn't grab my phone, grabbed the remote, turned on the news so I could hear that really mm-hmm. loud and wake up. And the first thing that pops up, they're showing the footage of it. And I really thought that we were under attack when I first saw it. Like, that's how fucking sick it made me. But then they, like, you know, went on. But I was shaking Logan awake. I was like, wake the fuck up.
Yeah.
So, this is so, I've been so worried about all of our Baltimore listeners and friends that we have today. So we're sending you guys a prayer because that is just, I mean, how terrible.
Tragic. I mean,
that is tragic.
One of my biggest fears.
I'm so thankful that it was at 1:30 in the morning and not at like rush hour because so many more lives would have been lost. And though we still don't have a full count at this point because of just how bad the damage is.
Yeah. So
by the time this comes out, I'm sure that there will be more information out on it. But at this point, it's the morning that it happened.
I mean, it made my stomach drop. I can't. And I've been that kind of person today where I'm constantly looking at it.
Me too.
I'm constantly watching the video over and over again. I'm like, why am I doing this?
Because I like really am having to watch every, like where you see the power turn on and turn back off again. And when they try to manually do it, they're blowing up that seam, yeah, trying to get the thing back. Like you can see there's an effort to try and, mm-hmm, I don't know, maybe it's just because of the fucking TikTok videos of the, what's that movie that we just watched with Julia Roberts?
Oh, the Obamas.
The Obamas production one that we talked about.
Leave the World Behind.
Leave the World Behind. Like that cargo ship.
Yeah.
Maybe it's just because of that movie.
Right.
It just makes me ill. What are you the CEO of?
This week, I am the CEO of Being a Mother Frickin' Bride.
Ting. I'm the CEO of...
Not the Arabesque.
Being tan. For the first time in years and can't shut the fuck up about it. I haven't been naturally tanned in so long. I don't want it to ever stop.
That's why we needed like another week there just to tan.
Yeah, like truly though.
I would have fried.
But let's talk about how good we did.
I am disintegrated.
We only got burnt the last day because we're like, it's the last day. It's cloudy. It'll be fine. We've got a base burn. Guys, we had 70 to 100 honestly the entire time. We did not fucking slip up once.
That's a lie.
What?
We lost our 70. We lost our 70 for the first day.
Yeah. And we got burnt on that, but we kept 50 and 30 like regularly coming on. Like we weren't fucking up. It was just that we were missing spots because we didn't have the spray, so we were having to rub it in.
Yeah.
And so there would be like a big gap that someone got burnt. Like Sarah had this one strip on her arm.
My ass cheeks are fried.
Fried. So the last day we didn't have 70 and we only put 70 on once and it was cloudy. So we're like, oh, we're good.
We're fine.
No.
We'll be in the cabana.
It'll be
at the bar drinking
pink pussy shots in the shade. It's fine. No.
I will never forget that one guy who said to me, oh, you must be the Irish friend of the group. I said, I'm sorry.
Sir?
I said, what does that mean? Like, I was so offended. He was like, honey, you need to go put some sunscreen on. I was like, oh my God.
Oh my God. When
rude?
When he walked by her, touched her shoulder, hey, honey. You need to go put some sunscreen.
You need
on.
To reapply.
I'm like, we just put it back on her.
I was like, I just put some on. We literally just put 5 it on. Minutes ago.
We were on top of it. We had Noodle with us. And Noodle's a fucking militant sunscreen girly. And she would come over to us like she was our mom and spray us if it looked like. I mean, we were on it. We were on it. I only got burned that one day. And then I was Gucci.
Yeah. My face is real fried, dry.
But and I don't know if that's just from the chemicals and the salt water.
I think it has a lot to do with it. Because whatever they had in the pool, I mean, it took my spray tan off in an hour.
In an hour.
It disintegrated my toenail polish off
to completion.
My toes. Like, totally. And I'm broken out in, like...
My chest, my back,
like,
and my chin.
Like, boil acne everywhere. I don't have breakouts. So, they're everywhere. My neck, my ears, my chest, my back, my face, my...
Yeah.
Crazy.
Yeah, we
I'm like, oh, perfect. Right before my wedding. Let me get that cleared up.
Yeah.
Never had a breakout in my life.
You need to go literally lay by the pool.
I need to go lay out in the sun. You're right.
Yeah. Lay out in the sun. Okay. Let's get into it.
If you're driving, throw that shit on cruise control.
If you got a glass, pour that shit up.
And let's get creepy.
Okay, Morgan, what do you have for us today?
Well, today I am going to be covering Rose Hall in Montego Bay.
Oh, shit.
It's only fucking fitting.
It's
right?
Only fucking fitting.
It's only fucking fitting. So before we start, we did not make our way over there because we were being safe travel girlies and we weren't leaving the resort.
We didn't have boys with us. We didn't feel safe.
We were being cautious girlies.
Even though I felt so safe the entire time we were there,
it
was just
like I could have went out and drove around for 9
hours. We really were like, we feel so safe. This is like anybody that ever was like, you shouldn't go to Jamaica. Y'all are fucking crazy. The people are amazing.
Amazing.
The culture is even better than you could ever like fucking imagine in your head. Food's the best food you've ever had in your fucking life. People are so kind. It's just when you're traveling with 8 girls, you kind of put a target on your back. So
yeah, you do, a big one, especially when you're taking pink pussies.
Yeah, when you're taking pink pussies all the time.
All right, so Rose Hall is one of Jamaica's most famous houses, and it has a very, very interesting story.
Mm-hmm.
It sits in Montego Bay.
What?
It sits in Montego Bay and has views overlooking you know, the ocean, but specifically the Hyatt Zilara Ziva Rose Hall
yes
resort, meaning they were just watching us take 14 pink pussy shots this weekend.
Thank God.
But of course, it, why would I be covering it if it didn't have some daunting and haunting history? So Rose Hall is haunted by its former mistress of the house, known as the White Witch, Annie Palmer, who lived, or should I say, ruled the plantation and its inhabitants. So all of this case is talking about the mistreatment and the abuse of the enslaved people on this plantation. So if you want to bypass that.
Trigger warning.
Giant trigger warning. If you want to skip ahead, probably, I don't know, 20 minutes, 25 minutes to skip out on this.
I'm not prepared to hear this after all the pink pussy shots that we took.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know. I was writing these notes and I was like,
we should have Googled this before.
Well, actually, I think you'll be surprised at the end. I got a little twist to the story.
I'm terrified.
So Annie was born in England in 1802 to an English mother and an Irish father. Their family moved to Haiti when Annie was 10 years old, and her parents ended up dying shortly after from yellow fever. Like, I think it was like a year or two later. And her nanny at the time, who was a voodoo priestess, raised and taught Annie in the black arts.
Right.
And this was her nanny for like a long time. And once her parents died, she took over as Annie's mother figure.
Right.
After her nanny's death, Annie had moved. Sorry, nanny and Annie. It's a lot of Annie's.
Yeah, Annie.
After her nanny's death, Annie had moved to Jamaica in search for a wealthy husband. And she might have been 17 or 18 at this time.
And what year would have this been? Sorry.
Is 1820.
Okay, 1820.
I had to do math. Yeah, right. She was born 1802 and this is 18. She was 18 years old. So yeah. 1820.
Yeah.
With her black arts practicing, she allegedly met and cast a spell on the owner of the Rose Hall estate, John Palmer, to trap him into a marriage.
Got it.
So their marriage from the get-go,
slay bitch,
was a little bit of a setup.
She said, I'm gonna go find me a rich husband
and I like the biggest, largest house on this island. You're coming home with me.
Yeah.
Making
pushes in the backyard.
My name is John Palmer. I would love to marry you.
And you're like, you just immediately become.
Have you seen those TikToks where it's like, when he's like, what are you doing the night before? Or he's like, he says, good morning, cutie. Meanwhile, this was me the night before mixing potions. Like,
no, swear to God. Yeah, I've seen those TikToks.
It's funny as fuck. Okay. Lost my spot.
Sorry, guys. You're going to hear something go in my mouth. My throat hurts so bad. I keep having to put these hard candies in my mouth to make me shut the fuck up so I'll be able to tell my kids. All right.
So Annie marries John Palmer, making her Annie Palmer, and she becomes the second mistress on this plantation that was once and still is by many regarded as the finest, most like prominent great house on the island of Jamaica.
It's stunning.
It is gorgeous. The house had 365 windows, one for each day of the year, 52 doors, one for each week of the year, 12 staircases, one for each month of the year.
I love that.
That is insane.
That is insane.
Little did John know before he married Annie. He not only married a woman clearly after his money, the gold digger, but he married someone who was a sadistic, psychopathic, deranged, heartless killer.
Oh, great.
Annie was batshit.
Mm-hmm.
Control was Annie's name. And pain was her game.
I hate that for everyone involved.
Everyone involved. If there was ever happiness in their marriage, it was not publicized. It was never documented because shortly after they had settled down, Annie killed John.
Oh, fuck.
She poisoned him in order to gain complete control over the plantation, which also included making several enslaved and freed Jamaican men her little sex toys.
No.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah, she did that.
Oh, my God. So she
poisons him. And she is like, everybody that's on this plantation is now mine. For my pleasure, for my entertainment, for my enjoyment. She's very fucked up.
Does she even know how to fucking run it?
No.
Clearly, she's like.
No, she has no idea.
Y'all are here for my enjoyment. No, bitch.
After this, after she kills her first husband, she obviously gets control of the plantation and she'll go on to marry two more men and kill them as well, both over a 9-year span.
Two more.
Yes. Every bedroom in the home, minus one, she had killed a husband in.
Oh my God, girl.
She was just swapping bedrooms. She's like, I mean, like, we could do like primary bedroom one and then kills that husband in there. And she's like, let's move over to this private
room. My ex-husband died in this room. It was tragic.
It was so tragic.
We have to move to the next room.
Come on, lover.
We'll get this renovated to be the primary room.
Yeah. So her second husband that she killed, she stabbed him to death.
Oh, my God.
And the third husband was strangled to death by herself and one of her lovers who was enslaved, then freed by Annie to be her lover. And his name was Taku. It's T-A-K-O-O. Not only did she love watching her husbands die, she also enjoyed observing those that were enslaved suffer from the brutal beatings by the people that work at the plantation.
Mm.
She would sit on the balcony of the second floor at the backside of the house and would just drink her tea, her coffee, and like be laughing and like in enjoyment of watching them strip these men, women, children down, whipping them. Extremely fucked up.
She's...
yeah.
Her fucking hand is broken.
Yeah. One thing that Annie did that has stuck throughout history and has been carried down legend, story after story, legend after legend, is that she ordered bear traps from other countries to use for her runaways.
No, Morgan, no.
Jamaica had no bears.
There's no bears.
Meaning she was importing bear traps and setting them up on the outsides of the property to capture any runaway.
Bear traps.
And her sole purpose for these traps was obviously torture.
Torture.
Pain.
And like, what the fuck? You just rolled up to Jamaica,
yeah,
and enslaved their own fucking people. And you're not even fucking from here, bitch.
Yeah, not even fucking from
here.
You're
not even fucking from here. You're literally from England. You lived in Haiti for what, 5 years of your life?
Yeah, she ordered her, so I guess they called them overseers.
Yeah.
So like the people that ran the plantation for her, mm-hmm. like, I don't know what to call them.
Yeah, I think, yeah, I don't know what the proper term is. Overseers neither. Is like what I've read in history books.
Me too. Okay, so she would order them to like any known like runaway location point. Like, so obviously like they knew that we could get out this way or right. we could escape this way. Any known runaway location point was loaded with bear traps.
Whoa. Oh my God. This
and
is terrible.
Yes. She would sit up on her ledge, her balcony.
Thank God we didn't go here, honestly.
Like all day, all night. And when she heard the screams of somebody being trapped in a bear trap, she would then take a group of the enslaved people, take them over there and sit there and watch as that person's leg is literally in a bear trap.
And you have to like rip. I don't even want to talk about it.
And that. She would leave them. She would either leave them there to bleed to out. Death, or she would take them down into their dungeon. So she had like, and it's an outdoor entrance. I'll talk about it a little more here. She would either take them back to their dungeon, and when she said they, quote, had no more legs because they were useless to her, and they were, there was like jail cells in the dungeon, and she would just lock them up and starve them
until they died.
Dehydrate, yeah, until they died.
Whoa. Thank God, Morgan, we did not go here. I thought it was just about a witch that lived there, not this bitch. Not yeah. this white bitch.
Yeah, white bitch. The white bitch of
Roosevelt. The white bitch.
Yeah. So many of the enslaved on the plantation died at the hands and the abuse by this sick and twisted white bitch.
White bitch.
Getting rid of her deceased and murdered enslaved was not an issue, and at the time would not bring up any questioning by the locals because owners, especially wealthy ones, were above the law.
Right.
But no one batted an eye at the right. actions and the decision.
And I'm guessing this is when they were under like English or British control.
Yeah, I'm not sure that timeline.
Yeah, I don't know what the time. I mean, I know it was in the 1800s.
Yeah,
because that's when a lot of people moved over there from England.
Yeah. But getting rid of her husband's dead bodies was a completely different
yeah,
scenario.
Yeah, that's a whole different fucking thing.
Scenario. But it was one that she well thought out. So again, the home had this secret door that led to her dungeon, which also was home to the jail cells for those that she delegged. And this route down here underneath her house allowed her enslaved people to easily dispose of the bodies of her husbands. She got rid of all of their bodies due to the fact that it led directly to the ocean.
Whoa.
Yeah. So yellow fever was the epidemic at the time. And on everybody's death certificate, all three husbands, they died of yellow fever.
No. Oh, my God.
And Annie was just like, well, they had the disease, so I had to dispose of them properly.
Oh,
no one batted an eye. Three men.
I guess no one
but
gave
But the locals
a
knew also.
I mean, yeah, because literally they're like having the fucking take bodies and then they're seeing the bodies.
Right. So Taku, who is the enslaved man that she freed to be her lover and the one who helped strangle her third husband, would actually bring Annie's death.
Mm.
Once Taku had been freed, he would visit her bedroom nightly and was, by all accounts, very loyal to Annie until she crossed the line.
Okay.
Taku had a granddaughter named Millicent. And one of Annie's plantation accountants, which I don't fucking know what a plantation accountant is.
What the fuck?
I'm an accountant. I'm sure. Whatever you are.
What the hell?
His name was Robert Rutherford. And Robert had the hots for Millicent.
Okay.
Which is Taku's granddaughter.
Oh, God.
And he had a huge crush on her. Well, this wouldn't be a problem if Annie didn't have a crush on Robert Rutherford.
No.
Who was head over heels for Millicent.
Oh,
not
no.
Annie. It was a huge, giant little love triangle that was did not even involve Annie.
Yeah, at all.
At all.
She implemented
but she
herself.
She inputted herself into this love triangle. But in Annie's eyes, this was a problem because he was a white worker on her plantation and he loved an enslaved woman.
Oh,
Millicent.
Yeah. And so she was an enslaved Jamaican woman.
Yes.
Oh, wow.
So one day, Annie made an advancement towards Robert Rutherford and she was denied because one, he loved Millicent, and two, nobody really wanted to fuck Annie. Knew they were next to die.
Yeah.
If you fucked Annie,
you're dead.
You're dead.
Yeah. Don't.
Fuck the white bitch.
Fuck the white bitch. You're dead.
Yeah. You're dead. And this rejection made that was too far.
I mean, that's what happened.
And this rejection made Annie extremely pissed off. So pissed off that she murdered in cold blood Taku's granddaughter, Taku, her lover's granddaughter, Millicent.
No.
Because Robert Rutherford, who Millicent had also like no idea that he even loved her.
Yeah, this has nothing
like,
to do with her.
This was just like, I've been watching her and like she's beautiful, like I have the hots for her.
We should kill him instead.
Yeah, because he was probably a creep.
Yeah.
Yeah. And she went and she murdered her lover's granddaughter.
Yeah, you crossed the fucking line,
and
you white
crossed
bitch.
The fucking line. Taku is furious. He's pissed. His love for his family was far greater than his affair with Annie and the murder that they shared together of her third husband, and he wanted revenge. Annie murdered Millicent out of jealousy, and to avenge her death, Taku made love to Annie one final time and then strangled her in her bed.
I mean, I'm not saying
there is two versions to Annie Palmer's death. The one where Taku strangles her, and the second where the enslaved people take over the plantation and push her off the very balcony that she watched them being beat day in and day out.
I mean, if he had this whole plan and he was like, I'm gonna start choking her, when I get her down, y'all fucking rush up here. Not that anyone's murder is, I'm just saying that this one's a little bit. Oh, she was going to be hung at the fucking stake. She was a witch. She murdered three husbands.
Yeah.
So she was going to die either way.
So the community as a whole is like filled with joy. Like locals, like, and everybody is like, holy shit, Annie's dead.
Right.
The white witch is dead. So she was originally buried at a site that was 5 miles up the road from Rose Hall. But later on in like, I guess like 1990 maybe. Mm-hmm. I don't know the exact date. They did DNA testing and they confirmed that this was her gravesite and the body that was buried 5 miles away. And they transferred her back to Rose Hall plantation site and placed her in a tomb.
In a tomb?
Yeah.
That bitch deserved a tomb?
A tomb.
I mean, you know what? If that's what the justice that the locals and descendants of these individuals wanted so that they could have a place to go fucking condemn someone to hell.
Well, and I also think they knew that there were so many spirits on this land and they were like, we want them to
be able to fuck her ass up.
So once they move her back to Rose Hall and place her in this tomb, they performed, I'm assuming the locals, performed a voodoo ritual in order to keep her spirit in this place. When it was time for the ritual to begin, the voodoo priestess recognized that her spirit was not in the tomb and it was roaming.
No.
Which led to an unsuccessful return back to where she needed to lay to rest.
Yeah.
And therefore, her spirit to this day roams freely, meaning she was probably standing right next to us drinking a Miami Vice.
No.
Because she
Annie,
not
you're
there.
Not invited to the girls' club.
Annie, you were not invited to the pool bar.
No, Annie, you're not allowed to fuck with us at all.
There is no living portrait of her that exists to see what she looks like. But some people think, so there's one painting in the walls. It's this very petite woman. She's dressed in red. And a lot of people think that it is made to represent Annie. This is because she loved the color red. It was the color of blood. And that was her fucking color.
Yep.
And though she never had any children, she supposedly had this portrait painted to convince people that she was the motherly type. But this couldn't be further from the truth. People say that if you find yourself walking beneath the painting, you'll notice that Annie's eyes follow you as you move.
Fuck no.
Because she's always keeping watch on everything in the house. So I'm going to show you this picture, Taylor.
Okay.
And a lot of people get freaked out by the kids in it because they look super stiff, doll-like, like as if she was standing there with actual, like no one knows who these kids are.
What
she
fuck?
Never had children. It's like just eerie.
I don't like her eyes.
Yeah. Well, they follow you. And she's like, she's got, we'll post this picture. She's got one like up on her.
She's got
holding
like
one up
kids.
On her hip. Yeah. There's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 kids and a dog in this. In
she's
this
got
painting.
Fucking a whole squad out
that
here.
That is supposed to be representing her.
As being motherly.
So after her death, she began to make these like ghostly appearances around Rose Hall. She was driving servants, guests and residents mad with like just terror. Like she was just terrorizing them. But before long, the house was abandoned and fell into ruin because no one but Annie could ever be the mistress of Rose Hall. There was one family who did try to live at Rose Hall in the early 1900s after the Palmers had abandoned it, or after it was abandoned after Annie's death. But they were driven from the place when their maid was thrown from the second story balcony by, quote, an invisible set of hands. The same balcony that Annie would sit and watch the enslaved people be tortured.
I love that they were like, we're getting the fuck out.
Yeah, they're like, we're out. Fuck
we're getting
this.
The fuck out. That's crazy.
After the death of the maid on the balcony, the new family fled Rose Hall and it remained abandoned up until the 1960s when it was then cleaned up, restored, and revived for public use as this historic house and plantation. But what if I was to tell you that this entire story that I just told you is all rumor?
Oh.
There is no actual proof that Annie did any of this. So here is the historical version and what many historians believe to be the factual story of Annie Palmer. This is according to the Association of Paranormal Study. In 1746, there was a man named Henry Fanning who purchased a 290-acre plot of land in Jamaica to prepare for his marriage to a woman named Rosa Kelly. They were then married a year later in 1747. But Henry Fanning died a few months after their marriage, after their wedding. Therefore, Rosa Kelly owned everything, the 290-acre plot of land. But yet, on this plot of land, there is no Rose Hall. This is just land that they
own. Right.
In 1750, so 3 years after her husband's death, Rosa marries again to a man named George Ashe, who then built Rose Hall officially. While some people think that Rose Hall was named for Rosa, George was close with the Rose family that just lived down the street, a very wealthy family. So a lot of people speculate that they gave him the funds to build this home.
And so they named it Rose Hall.
Got it. Or something else was going on there that somehow he got the business deal. I don't know.
Yeah.
In 1752, George died just after Rose Hall was completed. So this is Rosa now on her second husband.
Yeah.
A year later, Rosa marries another man, named Norwood Witter. He ended up spending all of Rosa's money and left her in debt and died in 1767.
I would literally
So now that's
him.
Three husbands that Rosa has had pass in a 10-year radius span. In 1768, Rosa married a man named John Palmer who was from a neighboring estate. John and Rosa both died shortly after their marriage. Like they were only married for a couple years. And because the two of them had no children, the estate was left to John's grandnephew, John Rose Palmer, who took over the estate in 1818, and he marries a Jamaican woman of Scottish descent named Annie Mary Patterson, aka now Annie Palmer. So they marry in 1820, and he was her only husband. This is like what the historians say. Annie marries John Palmer only husband. Neither Annie or John died at Rose Hall. In fact, they couldn't handle the debts that were passed down from his uncle, great uncle. And so they couldn't afford Rose Hall, and they eventually had to abandon it. When they were at Rose Hall, they only had one or two enslaved people. And after they lost Rose Hall to debt, they lost their enslaved people too.
Right.
John ends up dying in 1827, and Annie sold what was left of their estate for about £200, which I think that's what that symbol is. She then passes away in 1846, around her mid-40s. And the two of them were only married for about 7 years. The rumors of the White Witch came from a newspaper clipping from 1868 that actually labeled Rosa Palmer as the White Witch of Rose Hall.
Mm.
So this is like generations way before Annie.
So she would have been the White Bitch.
Yeah. Which honestly makes a lot more sense, especially given the number of marriages that she historically had that is documented.
Yeah, and we do know that it was operating.
Right.
Yeah.
Then in 1911, another story came out about the White Witch, only this time it labeled Annie with the title.
Because she was the last one.
In 1929, a man named Herbert D. Leiser wrote a book called The White Witch of Rose Hall, with Annie once again labeled as the White Witch. And this book was meant to be fiction, like this whole story was meant to be fiction, but it soon became reality, which is a perfect example of how fiction and fact can mold into something completely different from the true story. And this is how legends and rumors are born.
Right.
So nobody knows like the true story. So this is has now just been legend since like the early 1900s that this Annie Palmer did this and this.
If that's not Annie,
well, and that's what I was about to say, like how, sorry, okay, Annie, if that wasn't you, we so apologize.
Yeah, if it's Rosa, you're the white bitch.
You're the white bitch.
But because like, there had to be some sort of a horrific person that did offer.
But what did they do still? They did DNA testing and they moved Annie Palmer back to that site when she didn't even die there.
Oh God. And that's why she would have been 5 miles.
Yeah.
So no wonder they can't find her soul. She's like, I'm literally not there.
Yeah. She's like, I don't want to be here. I'm
crossed the fuck over.
So I don't know where like the legend got mixed. I mean, I guess we do from these articles, but I just think it was like this story that was being told and like rumors being spread down.
I think,
down,
yeah, just a game of telephone over up. Yeah.
A game of telephone over 200 years.
Yeah. Like I'm not going to, I don't want to discount at all like any of the enslaved people's stories that they had an experience while being enslaved at Rose Hall. Right. But if it was not Annie and we just fucking called her a white bitch and it was actually Rosa, because like that's.
Yeah.
So sad.
It is sad. And it's sad for Annie's soul and spirit. Like
if
that's
she's,
like
if they
so,
literally
that
moved
so
her
sad
back
for her. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, so, if they did this DNA testing and they determined that it was at Annie Palmer, then no one checked with the fucking historic society.
I don't know. Well, I mean, I'm assuming they just did.
I hope that they did not move Annie.
I
good
think
Annie
it's
Palmer's.
Just, I think it's also though like
that could be a part of the fucking lore too.
I think it's also just like a tourist trap though.
Yeah.
Like they moved her back because the story is that it was Annie Palmer.
And that's why they did it.
Yeah.
I hate it.
I know.
All sides of it,
I
hate
it. So the best part about Rose Hall and what's really interesting is that Johnny Cash and his wife, June Carter Cash, lived at Rose Hall.
Oh my God.
They bought the house in the early 70s from John Rollins and owned it until the Rollins family bought it back in 2012 after both of the Cashes passed away. And Johnny Cash did have a paranormal experience while there. Hmm. He said that once they were hosting a dinner party one evening and he saw this apparition of a woman in white. She was in her 30s and she just was walking from the dining room towards the kitchen. And he even went on to write a song about Miss Annie Palmer.
Oh, God.
So I'll read you the lyrics. On the island of Jamaica, quite a long time ago, at Rose Hall Plantation, where the ocean breezes blow, lived a girl named Annie Palmer, the mistress of the place, and the enslaved all lived in fear to see a frown on Annie's face. Where's your husband, Annie? Where's number 2 and 3? Are they sleeping beneath the palms beside the Caribbean Sea? At night, I hear you riding, and I hear your lover's call, and I still can feel your presence around the great house at Rose Hall. Well, if you should ever go to see the great house at Rose Hall, there's expensive chairs in China and great paintings on the wall. They'll show you any sitting room and the whipping post outside, but they won't let you see the room where Annie's husband's died.
Mm.
So, like, that's where I don't know where to, like, I mean, he's also like abetting this whole like thing.
Well, yeah, because that's a story that he's been told.
Right. And I'm sure it's a story that every locals believe in. And it might be the true story.
We have no idea.
We have no idea.
We were too scared to ask about it. We just heard that there was a white witch. We don't want to be anywhere near her.
Even if you go on like Rose Hall's website, it does say like Annie Palmer. And it does.
So it recognize
Annie.
It could be either.
Yeah.
And who are we to say?
Yeah.
We don't fucking know.
If the story is true, crazy fucking
crazy
bitch.
Fucking
whoever you
bitch.
Are.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Yeah.
So, anyway.
Yeah.
That is my case on Rose Hall Plantation in Montego Bay, Jamaica.
Thank you for that, Morgan, but no thank you at the same time. All right. My turn?
Your turn.
So the case I have for you tonight.
Thank you, Knoxville.
Okay, my worst accent ever. I've got a DB Cooper-like case for you.
Mm.
Okay, and I am shook that I had never fucking heard of this case before because I wanted to cover something like DB Cooper because I know my case that I gave you guys last week was fucking hard. It was hard. And this one's still sad, and there are going to be discussions of suicide throughout it at very different, like various different locations, but I will give you a trigger warning for those. But other than that, like it's really more of just like a DB Cooper case.
Okay.
All right. So let's jump into it. This is a case of Albert
Einstein?
No. Albert Lowenstein.
Okay.
Not Albert.
I know that last name.
It's definitely not it's Albert. It's
Deferi? No, I am.
It's definitely not
the edit.
It's Alfred. Alfred Lowenstein. I keep calling him Albert, though. I typed it like nine times.
Oh, it's not even Albert?
No, it's Alfred. Alfred. Okay, I'm so sorry. I kept typing it, too. Okay. Alfred Lowenstein was born on March 11th, 1877 in Brussels, Belgium, to Bernard Lowenstein, who was a German Jewish banker. And then his mother, I don't know what her name is, but she was the daughter of a Brussels stockbroker that was named Kristen Dansert. Now, we don't know much about Alfred's life growing up, but what we do know is that he was born into this very prominent family. Like, both his mother and his father came from big time banking financial people. And by his 20th birthday, he had entered the financial world and became this like tycoon type of dude. He quickly became this powerhouse and really made a name for himself, like put his family, Lowensteins, on the map. And in 1908, he married a woman named Madeline Masson, on all accounts, an absolutely fucking stunning woman. She came from a very prominent Belgian family.
Okay.
And eventually they had one son together. Alfred Lowenstein primarily made his fortune by selling stock in a Brazilian infrastructure company in Belgium, France, and England. And by 1914, he became one of the top three richest men in the... What?
It just sounded like a location, Belgium, France, England.
I know. And then I was like, let me go back. Let me go back and separate that.
I love that town, Belgium, France, England.
Belgium, France, England. That shit. I love it.
That's my favorite town ever. I can't
wait to visit. Oh, God. So by 1914, he became one of the top three richest men in the entire world.
Holy shit.
Yeah. In 1914. By investing in electric power and artificial silk, which was like up and coming at the time. No one would like move money into it. And he was like,
I will.
I see it.
These
Let's
are the
go.
Best snaps I've ever done in my life.
Right. Those are the best snaps you ever have done. Never once in a DG meeting did I ever hear those. That was.
Usually it's like this. Wait. Usually I snap like this.
Logan doesn't know how to snap. And it like really is the bane of his own existence. Like he can't handle it.
I can't either. My fingers pop out of my sockets.
Oh, okay. Moving on.
Like I have to pop back.
Literally up. Popped up against her head right then and there. By the mid 1920s, he was so powerful that he was actually consulted by heads of the state from around the globe. And the British government made him a companion of the Most Honorable Order of Bath. Of the Bath.
Why didn't Annie Palmer marry him?
Literally. She didn't need to. He didn't need to be killed. He was a cool dude, I guess. In 1926, Lowenstein established the International Holdings and Investments Limited.
Holy shit.
Which raised huge amounts of capital from wealthy investors wishing to get like a on this bandwagon of success with him. So it was kind of like almost like an MLM, but like it was actually,
but he was like,
he basically he created Holdings. Yeah, exactly. He is the wolf of the world at this point, for which he had two other like main investors that he ran this company with, which I'll come back to later. However, though Lowenstein had this like he was considered this financial massive powerhouse dude, he was regarded as being a weird dude. Like they called him eccentric, you know? And okay, when I see that,
oddball.
Yeah, he's just a little bit of an oddball. And an example of this would kind of be his marriage with Madeline. It seemed as if their relationship, like to the outside, was totally fine, but truly it was more about status and convenience for the both of them than anything else. Basically, like, Alfred Lowenstein wanted a gorgeous wife who could attend parties, host parties, and show up for that level of society, and was kind of like built for it. Because I think I could turn it on if I needed to, but like I need to send my Pedro Pascal shirt. I walked in the door from the airport and I took all my clothes off and laid on the floor. Like he wouldn't like me a wife as a wife.
Yeah,
he
not.
Needed someone that was like.
I walked in, I opened up both my suitcases in the middle of the living room just to give Aaron his clothes and to get lotion out for my face. And they're still there 3 days later.
Yeah, my...
He probably wouldn't like that.
My either. Delta zip tie is still on mine, unopened. Not good. Not good. Yeah, he would not like that from us. We would not be... I would love to live that life. Not for me. Anyways, just one that knew that world. And honestly... like most of all, that would just leave him the fuck alone so that he could focus on his businesses. Mm-hmm. So they had this like agreement that they could basically be roommates. And as for Madeline, she just wanted the money. She wanted to be taken care of. She wanted to spend as much money as she wanted. She wanted to live this lavish life. And she wanted to have like a good husband that people would be jealous of. And that's what he fucking was. They liked each other a lot. So they had this agreement. They loved each other, but they just weren't about each other, you know? But also, Alfred was complicated too, because he often spent, like, no woman could just be with him. Like, he did not pay any attention to her. He often spent his days just dreaming and daydreaming and thinking and talking about work. It was the only thing that he could think or do or speak. He would come up with endless ideas. He had notebooks on him that were filled to the brim with ideas, or I should call this person, or da 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 da. And he was on this constant train of thought that only took a break for one thing, and it was definitely not his son. It was definitely not his wife. It was definitely not anything at all other than his only other passion, horses. He fucking loved horses.
Equestrian.
He owned a bunch of racehorses, and they were like really successful racehorses.
And you know, he had full Hermes everything.
Oh, bitch. Oh my God. Yeah. And he would spend all day. That was the only thing that he would do. It was just relaxing for him. But you know, this is kind of pretty common with entrepreneurs at Lowenstein's level, though. Like, think about some that we live with in today's society. Like, right. Most of the time, if they even have a wife, it's probably a situation like this. Or they've had 13 wives, and then, you know, or they're not married at all, or husbands and partners and so on and so forth. I say that because, like, if you don't know an entrepreneur, I don't think this will make sense. And this might even be a hot take, but in my opinion, like, entrepreneurs are artists in their own realm. And it's because it's all consuming. Everything that they see is their art. It is, it becomes a business idea. And it's something that they can't escape. They almost live these, like, tortured artist lives that they can't fucking escape it. It can't turn off your brain. So they end up having the only one thing that they can go to calm them. And for the most part, it's not going to be another person because they don't want to hear anybody else speak.
Right.
So this is, again, maybe a hot take, but just my own experience and my own thoughts in that. Now, on to the case. Okay, so
I can't wait.
It was the afternoon slash early evening on July 4th, 1928, when Albert Lowenstein arrives at the Croydon Airport, which was just outside of like modern day London, but at the time, Surrey. And this was the only international airport in the UK during the interwar period, and had only opened up in 1920. So it had only been open for eight years.
So this is what, World War One?
World War One, yes. So there, Lowenstein boarded his brand new custom-built private Fokker aircraft to make a trip to Brussels with six other people.
Not the quiet fucker.
I know, the fucker. It's F-O-K-K-E-R. And I I wish I could explain. It's definitely tell fucker. You. It's no, it's not. It's Fokker.
I like Fokker better.
Me too, Fokker. But I wish I could tell you the name of it so you could Google it. I'll have a picture on there for you guys. But you know, I couldn't be like. It's like when someone's like, it's a Cessna 375 double engine FW64. I'm like, I don't fucking know if that's an I, an L, or a 1. I don't know. Okay. So he boards his aircraft with his private custom-built aircraft with six others. The pilot named Donald Drew, the mechanic named Robert Little, the two stenographers, which were two women that would travel with him, and they would transcribe everything in shorthand that only they could read with him. So he didn't have a tape recorder on him, I fucking guess. I don't know. But they were there to record everything that he said at all times. Named Eileen Clark and Paula Bidelon. And then Lowenstein's private valet that traveled with him everywhere named Fred Baxter. And then his secretary slash like the closest person to him in his entire life, best friend, Arthur Hodgson. Hodgson. And as I said, this was a custom brand new plane made just for him to serve as a business office in the fucking sky.
I love that.
It was extra soundproof to allow for better conversations of business while flying, and so that his stenographers could fucking write down everything.
So they didn't have to hear this.
Yeah, they didn't have to hear. Wah. They didn't have to hear that, you know. But also, I want you guys to have a better understanding of the layout because it's really important to the case. So I'm going to walk you guys through it in detail. And there's going to be, I'm going to try my best to make a diagram, hand drawn again, apologizing to everyone on Instagram. But if it's not on there, it's because I couldn't post that on there. I'm too embarrassed. And you're just going to have to pay really close attention. Here we go. So let's act like you're standing in the cockpit looking towards the back of the plane. All right. That's where you're at.
Okay.
Right. Per usual, there's a door that blocks the cockpit from the rest of the plane that has this large partition window on it, allowing the captain, the pilot, the mechanic to see the entirety of the business suite, which is like where if you're in a, you know, regular plane, all the chairs would be, right? If you walked through the door and into that business suite, that's what I'm going to call it, and continued walking straight back, you would run into a second door that had no window in it. And this door would open up into like a hallway. I'm going to call it a foyer, though, because it was just like a little mini foyer. Like, you know where you board your planes?
Right.
That in the back of the plane. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
And almost immediately to your left, there was a small, thin, windowless door. And that is where the restroom was. And then if you took one more step and you like were literally touching the back wall of the plane in this little foyer back hallway, to your right, there was a big, huge door that was 6 foot tall, 4 foot wide, with a small window at eye level only. And it was like a square. I say small because it looks small in the door, but it's like a pretty big window. Like it's the size of your face. You can look out of it. And that was the only exit door in this entire plane.
Okay. That's how they entered and that's how they exited.
Mm-hmm. And there, like I said, there's only two doors that have windows in it. The one that's in the cockpit and the one at the back that would take you outside.
Okay.
The other two doors are the one that takes you into that back foyer. And it's a big one. No window.
Sounds like they might run into a little bit of a balancing problem. You when they're might need on and off. Fucking... You're getting on and off at the back end.
Right, exactly. You're going to flip fucking backwards. And you're going to do a fucking wheelie. But then, like, the laboratory door, like, the laboratory to the restroom, that's, like, a typical thin little door.
No window.
No window in it. Right. Okay. So, before taking off, Lowenstein had to run inside to the terminal really quickly, because when you have a private airplane like this, you just pull up in your fucking limos and you get off. But he is like, I need to run inside really quickly, because he had to make a phone call. And he was making this call to Sir Robert Holt, who was a Canadian financial magnate, in order to make their dinner plan, to confirm their dinner plans for the following week. After this, he returns to the plane. He makes himself the seventh and final soul on board of the aircraft. So there are now 7 people. The doors get shut. That is all that is on this aircraft. Just after 6 p.m., the plane takes off smoothly and begins its flight to Brussels. But they were actually flying to France, right? Okay, I'll get to the actual name of the airport that they were going to. But we know this due to the accounts of several witnesses, in addition to the flight logs, that were gathered to watch this private plane with the third richest man in the world take off. And outside one of the back windows, the only exit, they could see Alfred Lowenstein waving at them as he took off.
He's on the back door of the plane. Like,
yeah,
this.
Back door, or maybe the side, like one of the portholes. But they said that they had a perfect view of him. They knew it was him. He was waving, smiling at them as he took off. Third richest man in the world.
Okay.
Right.
You would recognize him.
So it was just after 6 p.m. when he takes off. Now, according to the 4 passengers in the business suite with Lowenstein, so it's him and 4 others, he allegedly chatted with them like a little bit, talked about business and the plans while reading a book until they had crossed over the English Channel coastline. So they had just gotten over and they're now over water at this point. Lowenstein's like, hey, I need to excuse myself to go to the restroom. So he sits down his book. He stands up and he walks to the back of the plane into that back foyer, shuts the door behind him, goes left to go into the toilet. Well, 10-15 minutes go by and he's not coming out. They're like, that's fucking weird. So I guess his secretary talks to Baxter, who is the valet, and he says, hey, will you go check on Alfred? He's been in the bathroom for a long time. Just make sure everything's good. So Baxter, the valet, goes back there. He knocks on the restroom door several times. No answer. So then he attempts to like jiggle the door to see if it's open. And to his surprise, it was unlocked. So he enters this small fucking plain bathroom, the laboratory, and there's no sign of him in there at all. Like nothing. Not a jacket, not a belt buckle, not a shoe, nothing. It didn't even look like he was in there.
What the fuck?
He's nowhere to be found. On this small fucking private plane of his made custom to him that he designed. He had been on it several times too. So obviously Baxter comes out. He pinches secretary Arthur H. I can't say his last name for some reason today. Arthur pinches him and he's like, yo, bro's gone.
Albert Einstein just ditched.
He's glitch. Sucked out the toilet. Like, yeah. I don't know what the fuck. He's not back there.
That was my first thought. I was like, wait, I know that's a saying, but like, did planes like that?
Maybe, who fucking knows?
Did planes like that used to literally get sucked
out?
But
like, don't you think that there would have been like a shoe or a belt buckle or something? Or like a hole in the where the toilet was?
Right.
Blood, maybe, because if it like shredded you to pieces.
Right. Toilets aren't that big.
Right. Like, there would be blood. So Arthur jumps up, searches, because he's basically like, go fuck yourself. You're pulling a trick on me. Goes, looks all over, no sign of Alfred anywhere. I mean, like I said, it's only the business suite, the cockpit, and the bathroom with the back foyer, and the exit door. They're searching all over. They cannot fucking find him. So Arthur, the secretary, writes this little message down on a piece of paper, slides it into the cockpit, and it says, Lowenstein is nowhere to be found. This is passed through the cockpit. Little and Drew get it, which are the mechanic and the pilot. And at this point in the flight, they, like I said, they're already over the English Channel, but they were only 5 minutes from where they were scheduled to land. So they had just crossed over the coastline into France because they were going to be landing at the Saint-Inglevert Airport. And instead of landing the plane, because they're only 5 minutes away from it at the scheduled location, they do a fucking U-turn. In the sky, 5 minutes out, and they go back to where they think if he was sucked out of the toilet, where he would have gone. But then they're also thinking maybe he accidentally opened up that exit door and fell out.
They would know.
Thinking that he was going to the bathroom. So they like fly over the channel really low, searching for him. They don't see him. They don't see him on the beach, nothing. And instead of just taking the flight 15 extra minutes back to where they just were to land the plane at the airport where they're supposed to land it, the mechanic and the pilot, but specifically Drew, the pilot, lands the airplane at 7:30 p.m., an emergency landing on a beach that was covered in these large sand dunes, like not an easy landing area. Now, what they didn't know about this beach at the time, though, is that it was under French military occupation.
Oh my God. Yeah, you can't land a private unauthorized plane in a military location.
Right. And in a weird place where no plane would ever fucking land. You're about to get gun pointed.
Yeah.
At your face right then and there. So now the six of the original seven passengers exited the plane, stood on the beach, and just waited for someone to come get them. Watching all of this go down was French Lieutenant Marquet of the French First Battalion, and he sent a crew to go arrest those who had just illegally landed on his fucking beach. So he sends a crew out there, they arrest the six passengers, and they're individually taken to be interrogated by this lieutenant. In these interviews, they admitted, like, that they had lost their employer. He went to the bathroom over the English Channel. They're all, like, visibly shaken, upset, sweating profusely, teeth chattering, sobbing, screaming, crying. Those are just a few ways that Lieutenant Marquet, like, described how these people were acting. But he also added that he found it extremely odd that it took all of these people 30 fucking minutes for these six people individually to admit to him that it was Alfred Lowenstein. They would, like, not say. They were like, our boss fucking jumped out, fell out, we don't know.
That's weird.
Right. And he was like, this went on for 30 minutes.
Unless they were all, like, PR prepped. I don't know about
that. Who knows? Like, maybe they signed NDAs. Or, like, right. We're not allowed to talk about anything. So he then, like, added on to this that he believes their stories wholeheartedly, as he found it impossible that one could fake the pain and the worry that he was witnessing in them as they were experiencing it. However, less than 24 hours after all of this, all French inquiries into this investigation and this disappearance in the sky were abandoned because it was not their jurisdiction. And technically, it was no one's jurisdiction, as they determined that he would have fallen out if he accidentally opened that door or was sucked out of the toilet or whatever the fuck happened.
Into the channel.
Into the international waters, which is why both British and Belgian officials took the same stance. They were like, we don't have jurisdiction, we can't investigate. Now, the only person that was willing to push for an investigation at this point was his wife, Madeline. She was the only one willing to fight for someone to come and help her find her husband, but she also had extra motive for this other than just wanting his body found, because without a body, his will and estate would be locked for 4 years until he was determined to be dead. Like,
oh my God.
Like, basically, like, they, what's it called when you be presumed dead? And only that would only be 4 years at least. So yeah. They had to have a fucking body, or she was going to get no money at all. No access to anything. But it was also going to be bad for his business partners if that happened, because then all of his own holdings and investments would be fucking locked. And nothing could be changed about them. Okay. Yeah, because he owned that international holdings company. It's a part of his estate. Locked.
Holy shit.
Right. So this had to be taken care of. No fucking question. I mean, this is the third richest person in the world. They had to find his body. And no one's willing to investigate. So basically, she was going to be broke and all of his partners were going to be fucking losing everything. Can't do anything about it. Obviously, this is not good for her or her son with Alfred. So she basically sets up this massive reward and reaches out to all these countries and is like, run this in the paper. I'm going to give you the biggest reward of your entire life if you go find my husband's body. Any fisherman, anybody, go find him.
Good for her.
So she reaches out to the media and the press, and she spreads awareness to get this out before his estate gets locked up and she has access to nothing. This ends up in some ways backfiring, because so many wild conspiracies began to spread, because the media was just keeping the story rolling to keep his name out there and let people know that there's a reward. But of course, they're going to be digging. Right. And here's just an example of a few of the stories that were published. Allegedly, a French fisherman who was out in the English Channel witnessed a man parachute down from a plane into the English Channel, and around the exact time that he landed, it would have been the same time that Lowenstein went missing, but he lands in the water and a big, huge private yacht comes and picks him up and sails away.
Why do I believe it?
Others allege that they witnessed a black car drive onto the beach after the plane emergency landed and a man got in and drove off.
Like, he was hiding.
Mm-hmm. And when I mean, like, this shit went on and on, I mean, another one is that he never got off the plane, or he never got on the plane in the first place, because what he actually did was sneak back into his limousine so he could run off with his mistress, who was locked up in an insane asylum, and they eloped.
Okay, now that one's a little far-fetched.
Like, what the fuck?
But why was I already thinking of the first two in my head?
Right, so I was too.
I am that conspiracy theorist.
I mean, yeah, but like,
I'm like, yeah, he went in the bathroom, see, like, and he custom built it. He went up, or he went down.
He, like, has a little hatch that he could get out. He custom built. And, you know, that one's plausible to think he's the third richest person in the world. Right. He could do whatever the fuck he wants. And he would have people after him. Like, who knows?
Yeah.
So those make sense. But like the runs off with his, like, he doesn't like, he doesn't want to be with women. He doesn't give a fuck. He wants to be this fucking horse and with his money.
Yeah.
Point blank period. That's it. So just some weird ass shit was going on. But okay, so 2 weeks go by and there were no actual developments other than these crazy ass theories until July 19th. There was a swell that was approximately 10 miles off Cape Grenay, France, and a skipper and his best friend were out fishing when they spotted something floating on the top of this swell. They go to investigate to find out that it is a badly decomposing body of a man who was wearing only silk underwear, silk socks, shoes, and a watch. They hauled his body on board of their boat and began searching for any identification. And on the inside of the man's watch, they found the name Alfred Lowenstein. They needed to get his body back to shore and call authorities, but he smelled so bad that they could not stomach him being on the deck with them. So they wrapped his body in a tight sail, like super tight, hooked a harness of sorts onto him and threw him overboard once again to drag the body to shore via this like towing technique.
Oh my God. Oh my God.
But you know what? Like, I can't say that I wouldn't have done the same thing because it's like gonna float away. But I mean, I can't even.
No, I can't imagine.
I can't imagine what that smells like. I can't. No, we're not gonna go there. Once on shore, the family and the proper authorities were contacted and his body was returned home, where the family paid for a private autopsy to be performed. And for some reason or another, this took 2 months, which is very, very long for an autopsy to get a formal report released. But either way, the medical examiner found that Alfred's manner of death was an accidental fall from 4,000 feet. He had a large wound to or incision or wound to his stomach and had broken every single bone in his body.
Oh my God.
However, his cause of death was technically drowning, as water was found inside of his lungs, meaning that he likely went unconscious after hitting the water but was still breathing and drowned to death. But what's more interesting is that alcohol was found in his system, which was odd to everyone that knew him because he rarely, if honestly ever, drank. He hated drinking. And according to the people on board, he didn't have anything to drink on the plane. And according to everyone that he had been with that day, he didn't drink. Lastly, something that stood out to his wife was the fact that he was allegedly reading a book before going to the bathroom. And he shut the book and he laid it down and he walked to the bathroom. Because according to her and everyone that knew him, friends, family, business partners, who the fuck ever, he thought reading books were the biggest waste of fucking time on the planet. He hated reading. It was a waste of time. And all that to say that obviously there's a lot of inconsistencies going on here with the story.
Right.
And some of these accidents are literally impossible. Literally impossible accidents. Therefore, there are several theories surrounding Alfred Lowenstein's death. And here they are.
Okay.
Number one, let's say it was really an accident. Thinking that he was going to the bathroom, he accidentally opens the exit door and falls to his death. This is supported by the fact that many people did testify that he had become more absent-minded in the recent months and years. In addition to that, during an inquest in Brussels, both of the pilot and the mechanic, so Drew and Little, testified that on their way back home after all this whole ordeal when they flew the plane back, they attempted individually going to the back of the plane, letting the other one fly, and opening the door. And each of them said on the both attempts that they made individually, they were able to get this door open. However, neither of them were under oath at that time, and there were no witnesses.
And how does he shut it behind himself?
When this was released, thousands of experts from the aviation community came out and said that that was utter bullshit. First off, this had never, ever happened before. Second, these doors looked completely different. The bathroom door versus this exit door. Plus, there's a fucking window at eye level. You walk up, you look.
You see the sky.
You see the sky. And then a military inspector came and checked out the plane and the door and everything and found that it was in perfect working order, meaning that it would be virtually impossible for someone to open it mid-flight. Not to mention that if, and I mean if, it were possible for a single man to forcefully open the door, it would 100% have to take two, by the way, like super strong men, by the way. A, the entire plane would feel the pressure change. Inside and in the cockpit, they would get a warning that the pressure changes was going on in there. And B, it would likely slam shut immediately if not, if it didn't rip off. It's right. Either that it shuts back and you can't get out, or it rips the fuck off.
Right.
No in between. Alfred, at the time of this, was in no shape to open this door and have the strength to do it because he had chronic rheumatoid
arthritis.
Yes. And it was in a massive flare-up at this point in time. Like, he could barely open and shut car doors.
Yeah, he couldn't do that.
He couldn't have done that. So, yes, is it possible for two men to open it up? Yeah, but 3 inches for it slams back.
What the fuck?
What the fuck? Many people, specifically journalists, actually tried this mid-flight on the same type of aircraft, if not the exact aircraft, and could only get the door open 3 inches before it would slam shut with the help of a second person.
Wow. Yeah, there's no way.
On that same note, we're going to move on to theory number two, which we will be discussing suicide, so I do want to give you guys a trigger warning. For all of those same reasons, it would be basically impossible for this theory to be true, that Alfred had committed suicide. But also, there were no signs indicating that Alfred was looking to end his life. And though there's no such thing as signs when it comes to someone dealing with suicidal ideations or depression or anything like that, there doesn't have to be signs. It just doesn't add up based on all other evidence about like Alfred and his life. So I'm just going to drop that, leave it there. We're going to move on to the next theory. This is that someone on board killed Alfred.
They all did.
Supporting this is number one, the fact that it would take at least two people to get that door open 3 inches.
Right.
Number two, the weird alcohol in his system and the story that he was reading a book. He didn't even bring a book on with him that day.
Right.
And number three, why not just land at the fucking airport that you're 5 minutes away from instead of doing a U-turn and flying 15 minutes back?
Right. Coming up with
to go land on a fucking sand dune beach that's occupied by the fucking French military.
Right.
Also, according to Robert Little, who was the mechanic on his deathbed, he told his wife that he believed that Lowenstein had been poisoned by someone in the back of the plane, which would have been the two ladies that were his like stenographers. Is that what it's called?
Mm-hmm.
Or his secretary slash best friend or his valet. He said that he believed that he had been poisoned by one of those people because just before Alfred got up to go to the restroom, Robert Little, the mechanic who was in the cockpit, looked back through that cockpit window partition door and he saw Alfred taking off his collar, his coat, and his tie, making motions as if he was choking or fighting for air. Except, going against this, allegedly, Little was the one that was in control of the plane up until the time that they got that note from Arthur, the secretary. So why would he be looking back? How would he be looking back? I don't know what the aviation cockpit right. type shit, you know, development looks like in 1928 on a brand new plane, but I'm assuming it wasn't
you probably
like,
had to pay a lot of attention.
You know, you probably had to be looking at where you're fucking going.
Right.
You know, also Drew was the one who landed the plane on the beach. Adding to this, neither Drew nor Little, which were the pilot and mechanic, ever radioed for help or Mayday reporting that someone had fallen from their fucking aircraft or was missing on flight.
Yeah, that's weird.
They never once got over the radio and said that. Lastly, why would Little and Drew, the mechanic and pilot, claim that they could easily open that door mid-flight? No fucking problem at all. Now, like, why would they say that? Now, let's say that everyone on board was in on this and that they were all involved in this was a murder. What fucking motive would they have to murder him? And why would each of these six people take this to their grave? What would motivate them to murder him and then all six of them take this to their grave?
Money.
Many people wonder if they were paid off by the two other stakeholders in that international holdings company that Alfred went into business with.
Ooh.
Even though it was his company, they were like the only two like big stakeholders in the company. People believe that it was these two mainly for one reason, because just 3 months after Alfred's death, these two investors came into what is the equivalent today of $200 million.
Holy shit.
And the recordings on the like transcripts of this business transaction was a quote special transaction on all documents, and that was all that it said.
Holy shit.
Other people speculate that
it was, sounds like they were paid off though and they organized it.
Well,
by somebody else.
They speculate that they were doing a lot of business with like mob mafia type
for
shit.
For sure.
For fucking sure. For international sure. Holdings company that says like it should be say fucking mafia runs this shit. 100%.
100%.
100%. Other people speculate if it was his wife that organized this.
That's what I was going to ask.
But she would know that the will would not, it, without a body, it wouldn't make sense.
It's too risky.
And this was going to be really hard. Like, I think.
If
and,
it was her, there was this was too risky of a play out. For
and
her
also,
to lose.
Like, what does she care? She has all the money in the world. She has the status of being the third richest person's wife and can do whatever the fuck she
I
wants.
I also would love to know when that will was written or updated.
Yeah.
To the point where. Because if he was like, I want everything frozen if yeah. there is no body.
Yeah.
Until well, I'm some presumed people dead. Said, if he thought that he was going to be, you know, not kidnapped, but yeah. like held hostage or ransom or like anything like that, or that somebody was.
He had allegedly had like been in a little bit of a struggle with money. But like how big of a struggle can the third richest person in the world be in with money?
Right.
But like there was a bad business deal, I guess, that went south that he was like not he was stressed about it, but not sweating about it. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. it was probably like a few mil, which is nothing to these people.
See, part of me, this is my crazy conspiracy theorist going on. Part of me feels like he hired a lookalike.
Mm-hmm.
He was going to, mm-hmm. he was going and hiding. He was going to hide a lookalike, which would explain the alcohol.
Which would explain the
he's
2 months
drinker.
Of the, it took to get the autopsy back.
It would explain how he had to run back in, make a quick phone call, mm-hmm. and then in comes the lookalike. He's reading a book, so his face is down, so no one on that plane is really noticing what's going on. Like, yep. this is like a twin lookalike. Like, yep. he's got big money, he can find someone.
Yep.
You know what I mean?
Yep.
And then this guy gets out of the plane, and his body was so decomposed, how are they going to recognize? And this is in the 20s, 30s.
Yeah, 20.
There's no DNA testing.
No DNA testing to confirm. The only reason that they knew it was him is because that watch said Alfred Lowenstein inside of it.
Right.
So there are, I mean, obviously we could go down rabbit hole after rabbit hole after rabbit hole. There's evidence that he's involved with the mafia and with some shady business. Who wouldn't be when you're at that level? Like, mm-hmm. I'm sure we would be. Sorry.
We are
at this level.
Just kidding.
But just like to move money around is really the reason that people would do this. And, yeah. you know, whatever, because of business connection. So do I think that his wife had the motivation to kill him? Absolutely not. Because I think they had this agreement. She could fuck other people if she wanted to. He right. did not give a fuck.
Yeah, he didn't care.
But like, I don't think that he would leave his son with nothing left. Like, you don't work your whole life like that to just lock it away from your kid who mm-hmm. was a child at that point.
I'd also like to see the girls' transcripts of that convo on the plane, like right before he went yeah. to the bathroom. Like, what were they talking about?
Well, that's another thing. So apparently Robert Little reported, who was a mechanic, that there were like stacks of notes, like his notebooks, right? That he had been writing down like all this stuff. He said that he collected them when they landed on the beach. They were never turned over to
Weird.
Investigative authorities. I don't know if they were given to the family. I don't know where the fuck this stuff went. Really weird.
And I also feel like the people, I don't know, I feel like the people on the plane probably knew a little bit more than what they're saying. And I think it's so weird that they did land the plane on a private beach, not even knowing that this mm-hmm. was a military, like,
yep,
land.
He was worth the equivalent in 1920s. He was 2 million pounds, but in today's currency, 2021 currency would have been $769.2 million. And he was the third richest person in the world. That, if that doesn't show you, now think about the most rich people in the world. Those are bills, bees, mm-hmm. blah, 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 blah. Think about how greedy
yeah.
capitalism is
yeah.
to make people billionaires when the third richest person in the world was 12 million pounds at that point. Inflation, obviously.
Holy shit.
700, almost 800. Million.
Yeah. That is a crazy case.
And at the time of his death, he was 51 years old. And let me show you a picture of him.
How old was his child? Son?
I'm not really sure. It was a son. I'm not really sure, but I think he was younger.
Is he
off in the Peaky fucking Blinders, mafia or what?
That yeah. is a man on the show Peaky Blinders. So yeah. try another image because that is a That's guy his from plane. The show. Let me see that.
Yeah, go through these pictures. I mean, like, really though.
No, guys, they look like Peaky Blinders.
You'll see all these pics, but like, fucking crazy. Tell me what Robert De Niro's doing
there. I could never open that door, not even on the ground.
No, you.
That is an iron door.
And it's locked, dude. It's locked. You don't just leave a fucking door unlocked in an airplane. That's a whole other thing that we could go down.
Yeah.
My favorite source for this, just because of the visuals I got, was BuzzFeed Unsolved. But
oh, I know they had good
there shit. Are several other like little bitty TV shows and creators that I watched that did it. And I've read
it's
like
a lot of room to hide underneath there, is yeah, all I'm saying.
I know. Because he could have got off on the beach. Why else did they land on that fucking beach? I will not get over that.
Yeah.
Pilots are trained to literally not panic.
Right.
So why would this dude panic so fucking hard that he's like, I'm going to land on this bumpy ass beach. Mm-hmm. He wouldn't. He's immediate. What you think when you're the pilot. Okay. Yes. This dude, your boss is missing.
Right.
But number one priority is that we're going to land this fucking plane
safely.
And we'll figure it out.
Something's going on here.
Something's going on. And I am the captain of this fucking ship.
Or maybe he knew that this was a France military. He would have had to have been. And he was like, I'm kind of scared. Something's going on. I think someone was murdered.
Well, a lot of people wonder if he was abducted by aliens. I think.
That's what also I was thinking glitch in the Matrix.
A glitch in the Matrix. Like he just sits down in the toilet and ends up just falling.
Yeah.
You know.
That's crazy.
Yeah, just the craziest fucking case in the world. Like, I've never heard anything like that in my life.
And just a...
You can't open a door on an airplane.
And without everybody knowing.
It hurts your ears.
Especially then. Like, yes. This weren't really pressurized cabins. No. Like, this is not like the planes
this
we have
today.
This
is a little tiny... It looks like a Cessna. Like, that's right. How like tiny this thing is. It looks like a
looks
bigger
like a metal
Cessna.
Box on wheels with...
Literally. I mean, look at this thing.
Yeah,
you know,
it looks
like
Amelia Earnhardt was in that. Like, that's
literally,
how old it looks.
It's fucking just iron.
Yeah.
So, I don't.
That's a crazy case.
Crazy case. And he kind of looks like my dad.
No, he looks like someone off Peaky Blinders.
He looks like Robert De Niro, who looks like my dad. Like, seriously.
Chip, what are you doing up on that
Chip,
plane?
What are you doing? Here's him in his little equestrian fit.
Oh, yeah, he is quirky.
Yeah. Let me show you. My cats are going crazy downstairs. Let me show you his
wife.
Did
you lock the front door?
Yeah, I did. This is his wife.
Was that your stomach?
That was my stomach. Absolutely starving.
I wish you didn't have kava because I could smack a McDonald's chicken nugget right now.
I was just thinking that.
Oh, stunning. So pretty.
She's gorgeous. Here's like a layout of how tiny this fucking plane is.
I saw that picture.
Yeah. Dude. Like, that's just crazy. There's just no way in fucking hell that this happened. Here's Captain Drew.
Oh, hello, Captain Drew.
Captain Drew was
Captain Drew.
Yummy,
doing,
yummy, yummy,
buddy.
Yep.
Who's that in the top hat?
That's him, Alfred Lowenstein.
Oh, you know those hats hurt.
Yeah. Well, they're filled with lead. What are we talking about? Was it mercury
bad.
Or red? Lead.
Red.
It was the color red.
They're red, filled with red 40.
They had fucking red dye 40 all in them. Yeah, that's crazy. But while researching this case, I found so many other just like bizarre twisted things that I have to like with famous people like that.
Ooh.
So it's we're going down a rabbit hole, everybody. Fucking hold on.
I can't wait. I love these kind of stories.
Me too. These are my favorite. This is like when I say like I enjoyed listening to true crime. That's the type of shit I'm talking about. Like that shit.
Very sad outcome.
Oh my God. Obviously. Very horrific, obviously. But like the mystery of it.
Yeah.
How
does that happen?
How do six people keep their fucking mouth shut if there was something?
Right.
That doesn't happen. Unless everyone was knocked the fuck out.
That's true.
That could be something. Alien. They were giving complimentary drinks. The partitions closed on that door because you could close that partition. If they're doing top fucking business shit, they could close. It's a partition window. You could cover it.
Yeah, they drug everybody and.
Mm-hmm. I have no idea. He says, I'm going to go into a really big meeting. He's like, let me get you a water. Great. There's alcohol mixed in that has like poison. It comes back as alcohol because it's glucose. It's sugar, broken down sugar. So.
Not the chemist druggist over there.
Becoming a fucking medical examiner. No idea if that's even true.
All right.
I've heard it before.
That's funny.
We gots to go. My stomach is...
We hungry.
We're starving. All right. We love you guys.
Love you.
Talk to you next week for the crazy dream creepy accounts.
We have so many. I can't wait.
I'm so fucking excited. All right. We love you guys. Bye.
Love you. Bye.